Meet the Press, the prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence Spivak. Ready for the unrehearsed conference are John Hightower of the Associated Press, Peter Lizagor, Chicago Daily News, Frank Bergholzer, NBC News, and Lawrence E. Spivak. They will talk with Senator J.W. Fulbright, chairman of the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations. Here is the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
Momentous decisions bearing heavily on the peace of the world are being made here in Washington. Of most immediate concern is the communist drive which threatens to overrun the Southeast Asia kingdom of Laos. The situation in Cuba, the Congo, West Berlin raise other grave problems for President Kennedy and his advisors. In all of these deliberations, the administration is maintaining close contact with leaders of both parties in Congress. Our guest today is Senator J.W. Fulbright. As chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, he occupies one of the most important and influential positions in Congress. During his 19 years in Congress, Senator Fulbright has devoted much of his attention to foreign policy matters. And now we're ready for questions, Mr. Spivak.
Senator Fulbright, you recently said in a speech, and I quote, "The U.S. is clearly undergoing the gravest test of its history." And you've also said, "I believe that the people of America will rise to the needs of our situation if they are clearly told what is at stake." Now, undoubtedly, you know what is at stake. Will you tell us as clearly as you can and as specifically as you can what you believe to be at stake in this battle against the communists?
Well, Mr. Spivak, that calls for a rather long answer. I'll try to be as specific as I can, but I do think that we have not realized the seriousness of the drive of the communists in the non-military activities throughout the world. I think we have been preoccupied with the military aspect of this struggle, and I think we've minimized the sort of thing that is going on all over the world. Now, in Laos and in Cuba, the military aspect in Laos of the Chinese communist is there. In Cuba, it was not. That is, not directly. It's through infiltration and subversion. And the solution to this, if there is one, is not military, in my opinion. And I think we have neglected this aspect of the struggle with communism.
Now, when you say we have neglected, when you and others say we must make sacrifices, who must make sacrifices and what kind of sacrifices? What can the people do?
Well, I think this country has not devoted nearly enough attention and effort and money into the non-military contest with the communism all over the world. We've had much too small an operation, especially in the exchange program, as an example. The cultural, the social reforms, the assistance of social reforms in many parts of the world. Take in Latin America, for example. We've had a close association with them, certainly since 1898, when the revolution. During this period, we've intervened in many occasions there. We've rarely done anything of any significance in the social reform of these countries. I mean land reform, in improving the standard of living of the ordinary people there. We always thought this could be solved by military means, and this is a misconception, and we have not devoted enough attention to understand these people and to help them come along toward a more civilized mode of life.
But, Senator, the criticism that has been made of the American people themselves, their unwillingness to make sacrifices.
I don't think they're unwilling. I do not think they have been properly led in this respect. They haven't been told in a clear enough manner just to what we ought to do. I think they would make the sacrifices, is first if they are made aware of the seriousness of it and then are told what to do and how to do it. For example, to pay more taxes and to create and support programs, long-term programs that are much better designed to meet this problem than we now have. I think refusal to enter into long-term programs in any of our foreign aid programs is an indication of this. There's been a feeling that we'll get rid of it next year. Let's keep it on an annual basis. This is true in Congress. always with the idea that, well, if we maybe next year we can abandon it. And this is a completely wrong approach to this problem.
Well, now, people say, pay more taxes. How are we going to pay more taxes if someone doesn't ask us?
Well, I agree with that. I say they have not been told of the need for it nor asked to do it.
Well, now, you're saying, then, that your administration has not told us all that ought to be told to us, has not called upon us for the sacrifices that we ought to make?
I would say that that is about correct. I thought this administration, when it started in the pronouncements at Los Angeles, in the speech of the president, and also his inaugural address when he said that we should not ask what the country can do for you, but what you can do for the country, set the proper tone. Now, I, in all frankness, don't believe we have followed through on that as we should. Contrary to that approach, we have now been engaged in the Congress in seeking ways to do more for the individual, that is, in minimum wage, depressed areas, medical care, and so on. This, to me, is not consistent with that approach, if that's what you mean.
Mr. Hightower.
Senator, much that you say here now is cast in a fairly long-range perspective. There is, of course, in the case of Laos, an immediate short-range problem. The most direct question I can think to ask on that problem, and one that many of us are interested in, is this. Do you think that in order to prevent the communists from taking over Laos, if it becomes necessary to achieve that end, would it be wise for the United States to send its own forces into the country?
I do not think so.
What do you think would be the result in such a situation if the United States did not send forces in and if Laos were lost?
Well, it would be a very serious loss. This is, I think, a very serious matter, but I do not think the terrain and the conditions are proper for our sending in our troops. Some other solution must be sought, and they are seeking it through negotiations. I think we've done our part, certainly, in this area. The Laotians do not appear to be very interested in their own defense. There are other countries much more intimately, directly concerned than we are, for example, India. I think if Mr. Nehru, as the leader of the Indians, isn't willing to take the lead in this, then I think we ought to be very careful in extending our forces there, and I would not favor that. There are many other things could be said about it, but this is a very bad place to venture into with our own troops.
Of course, this is a developing situation, and it's quite possible a ceasefire may return some stability to it. But if it should not do so, do you think that some kind of further action by the United States involving the disposition of its military forces might be necessary with respect to other countries in the area, Thailand and South Vietnam?
If those countries requested and are cooperating properly, yes, I think that would be entirely proper. The terrain and the conditions are quite different. I believe the citizens of these countries you mentioned are more interested in their own defense. Therefore, you'd have much greater opportunity for success. So I think that would be proper.
Mr. Lissagore.
Senator, do you think that the communists will ever choose a terrain and a situation which is favorable or advantageous to us in this battle you're talking about?
Well, not deliberately, no. Everybody would try to choose the terrain most advantageous to themselves. But not all places are as bad as Laos as far as fighting a war goes. We had the experience of the French to go by. We should have learned from their experience at Dien Bien Phu of what kind of terrain this is and how difficult it is.
Senator, I'd like to ask you a broader question, but in the same connection. Are we not faced with a situation now, after Cuba and after the possible fall, at least, of Laos, of where the communists in the Kremlin and in Peking may miscalculate about our willingness to take any actions?
That's always possible. That is the greatest danger, I think, of our having a disastrous war, is miscalculation and accident. I don't think either great powers desire deliberately to precipitate an all-out war. And this is a great danger, I confess.
Senator, as chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, have you been consulted, or how would you feel about taking this Laotian matter to the United Nations, where at least the issues might be exposed?
It seems to me that might be very proper, because the other meeting there of the ICC doesn't look as if it's making any progress.
Well, why haven't we done it as you understand it?
Well, I can't tell you that on the details daily policy of the government. I'm not a member of the executive, and I don't know why they haven't. I think as long as they had hopes, or still have hopes, that the ICC will act, then it would be premature to go to the UN. That's my offhand statement as to that. I'm sure they're considering the UN angle.
Mr. Burkholzer.
Senator Fulbright, you said that you would be firmly opposed to sending American troops to Laos. You, along with other congressional leaders, have been consulted by the president on this matter. Should we assume that you have advised him against this action?
Well, I think you have to make your own assumptions. I don't think it's quite proper for me to discuss what I say or said in these briefing sessions. That should be in the nature of secret, if we possibly can keep it so.
Well, Senator, the question arises because there is a question whether the Congress would support such an action if the president were to take it. We've been given to understand he's considered military action in Laos. Do you think he would find a great lack of support in the Congress?
Well, I can only speak for myself. I think I know there are others who share my views, but we've made no poll, and I don't know. You've been here long enough to know it's very dangerous to prophesy what the Congress will do as a whole. It's a very large body.
On the same subject of consultation, Senator, how much consultation on the Cuban affair was there prior to the fact, or did this all burst as a great surprise to Congress?
Well, no, I think there was a reasonable amount of consultation.
Do you think the result of this has been a serious and damaging loss of prestige to the United States?
The Cuban affair?
The Cuban affair.
I certainly do.
Is there any way to recoup that you can think of?
Yes. Would you like me to...
Yes, sir, I
pursue
would.
...pursue it a bit? Well, I do. I think that the initiative taken last summer at Bogota and followed up recently at the meeting in Rio in developing the so-called Alliance for Progress, the program that is underway in utilizing the Inter-American Bank is the way to meet this program. I deeply regret this other incident has intervened because that was a most hopeful development. It's the first time we have officially, in a reasonably substantial manner, undertaken to be of real assistance to these countries in reforming their own society. That is, giving them assistance in the kind of social reform that I mentioned. I mean by that improving the living conditions through housing programs, through land reform, through the breaking down of the ancient feudal systems that have prevailed there ever since they were colonies of Spain. And I think we can help them. We never have devoted any real efforts in this direction. And Senator Mr. Dillon was really, I think, deserves much of the credit for having carried through this program. The Congress has now approved the appropriations. That is, the House did, as you know, which is the main hurdle. So this is on the way, and I think this is an excellent and the way to approach it. And I think it can succeed.
Mr. Spivak.
Senator, before I go to the question of foreign aid, I'd like to ask you one more question on Laos. If a decision should be made to send troops into Laos, who would make that decision? Would it be a decision made by the president, or would be this something that the Congress itself would have to pass on?
Well, it would first be made by the president. And under our system, while we discuss these matters, I hope discreetly in advance, once the decision is made, of course, I think we will support the president. We have to do this, in my opinion, in the national interest. But it's perfectly proper to discuss whether or not we think it's wise. He knows much more about it, he necessarily does, than I do or anybody else, because he is the focus of all of the intelligence of our entire government. And I would, of course, support it if he chooses to make that decision, but we all have our duty to develop our own views about it, and I would hope he doesn't make that decision.
Now, Senator, on the question of foreign policy, on the question of foreign aid, we've spent, I believe, close to $90 billion since World War II on foreign and military aid, if you will, economic and military aid, and we seem to be on the defensive against the communists all over the world. Do you think some change of our policy on the way we give foreign aid and what we do about it is in order?
I do. I do. As you know, over the years, many of us have been very critical of the way it has been conducted. I've already mentioned one of the major things is the refusal of the Congress to accept a long-term program. Now, my committee tried to do this, as you recall, 2 years ago. We proposed, brought out a bill providing for a 5-year program. to give an opportunity to plan in advance and to analyze each country by country and to make an effective program. We were turned down. The administration withdrew its support at that time after the bill was on the floor. But I think this is a major difference. It's the acceptance of the responsibility rather than engage for real, I'd say, reform or progress in this field rather than a relief program. This annual business was in the nature of relief. I would say about the large amount you mentioned that about two-thirds of that, at least, has been of a military nature. And I think we've overemphasized the military relative to the non-military activities, except in the case of the Marshall Plan in Western Europe, which was an outstanding success. And it's the only one which was approached as a long-term program. We were told then it'll be a four-year program, it takes so much, and we'll do it, and we did it, and it succeeded. And I think that was could have been the same principle in other countries, although other countries are undoubtedly more difficult than the highly developed society in Western Europe.
Are you planning again this year when foreign aid comes up to put it on a long-term basis?
Well, we've already discussed this informally with the administration, and I hope they're planning to bring it up that way. It's my current understanding that they are favorable to this approach and that we assume responsibility in this field over a period. It's the only way it can be made effective. This is a very difficult program. They are taking their time. It's going to be another month, I expect, nearly a month before they get the program up. And the reason is that they are trying to work this thing over and to put it on a more sensible basis.
But specifically, by long term, what do you mean? 2 years, 3 years?
I would say 5 years is a proper period to authorize a program. And that then each country is analyzed its own needs specifically, and that the remedy is applied to the country. Each country differs. The problem are different in every country. We've had a kind of a blanket program, and they go in and do certain things quickly. They had what they call impact programs to make a show. It often did not go to the root of the trouble in any of the countries.
Mr. Hightower.
Senator, the President has said on several occasions recently that the United States has to prepare itself with different tactics and different strategy to fight the Cold War in a different manner. I'm curious about some of the problems that arise in that respect. A year ago, we had the U-2 incident, and President Eisenhower took personal responsibility for it. Recently, in the Cuban matter, President Kennedy took personal responsibility. This relates, in my mind, to the way you fight the Cold War. Now, is such an acceptance of public personal responsibility, in your view, an essential part of the presidential office?
Well, I think you know that I think clearly that the president should not take responsibility for espionage activities, the covert activities of the government. This is contrary to the practice of all civilized states since the beginning. I think there's a distinction in this respect between the Cuban affair and the U-2 affair. They're not on all fours in this respect. So that I would make that distinction. I think in this case it was so well publicized in the press due to the remarkable astuteness and resourcefulness of our press. They had all of this covert activity on the front page long before it happened. So that I think it's not the same. But generally speaking, all overt activities, the president necessarily takes responsibility.
Of course, I might say it wasn't too much of a problem to find out what was happening on the streets of Miami. What I want to get at beyond this is the question whether there is a mechanism or a way of organizing the government which ought to be looked into so that the president's responsibility clearly terminates it for detail at some point.
Well, I think that's right. I do not think the way we have organized and conduct the CIA is a very efficient and proper method. There have been many criticisms of this, you know, going back to the Clark report of 10 or 12 years ago, General Clark's report, and I think it itself has become a kind of a semi-public activity, and its leader makes speeches, and everybody knows about certain things about CIA, so it isn't quite, it's a gray operation rather than a really a covert one. And I think this surely will be the subject of comment by General Taylor in his report, which, as you know, they're now investigating the CIA, and I think that this would ought to be handled by that.
Mr. Lissagore.
Senator, you investigated the CIA after a fashion in the U-2 affair. Were you persuaded that the CIA should separate its intelligence-gathering functions from this so-called black arts area of operations?
Yeah, I do. I think that they should be two separate operations, that the intelligence should alone be by itself.
The question of an Official Secrets Act has been raised here in the past couple of weeks because of the Cuban affair. Would you subscribe to an Official Secrets Act in which it would be made a crime if you violated certain secrets involving national security?
This is a very difficult area. Of course, as you know, de Tocqueville mentioned this, one of the greatest handicaps of a democracy is this question of secrecy compared to an autocracy or a totalitarian system. The dilemma of keeping things secret at the same time informing the people so they will support the policies is almost an insoluble one, and I don't know that I could give you a good answer to that, except that it's very difficult to reconcile these two interests. On the one hand, you do have an interest in a certain amount of secrecy.
Senator, I assume you accept the president's word that the situation confronting us in the world is pretty grim and that the hour is late. From what you've said, I assume you accept that. Would you think it prudent, then, if it's that bad, for him to declare a national emergency of some kind in which we could get our priorities straightened out and do what is necessary to stay in business?
Well, I would hope, I don't know about the formal declaration of an emergency, I would hope that the president will give special attention to informing us over the television, which is now one of the best means of getting a broad audience, and having what I would call some educational interviews rather than spot news interviews to inform all of us the nature of the conditions that we confront and what we ought to do about it. Coming back to Mr. Spivak's question, this ought to be emphasized. The character of the contest as it has now developed, and also outlining what we ought to do, and be consistent with his initial statement in the inaugural address. Now, I think this has the highest priority, in my view. I think the American people are eager and anxious to do whatever needs to be done if it is clearly outlined. And I think here, as I said a moment ago, of my principal criticism of the new administration, which I, of course, support, is the failure to go through with this thought of outlining more clearly what our situation is, where we are, and then what we ought to do and where we ought to go. And I think this is very necessary.
We have about 1 minute. Mr. Burkholzer.
Senator, I believe you said in the past that there's been too much American commitment to overseas military bases. Fidel Castro now is demanding the return of the Guantanamo base. Would you favor that at all?
Well, this is a very special case, and having to do it under pressure and all that, I would say no, not as of now. But I was pleased to see the president order the deactivation, I think, of 73 bases around. I think we've overdone this, or put it another way, times have changed, we've moved on, and the conditions which justified those originally is no longer present, in my opinion. And I think in view of our commitments, beginning way back with the Rio Charter or the UN and even before, that our whole policy goes in the other direction now.
Gentlemen, I'm sorry to have to interrupt, but our time is up. Thank you very much, Senator Fulbright, for being with us.
Our thanks to Senator J.W. Fulbright and to the members of the panel, John Hightower of Associated Press, Peter Lissagore, Chicago Daily News, Frank Burkholzer of NBC News, and Lawrence E. Spivak.